You're listening to the Cerberus Podcast with a K, available on Cerberus.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audioboo.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Cerberus Podcast with a K. My name's Christian Corley. Joining me this week is Gareth Cavanagh. Hello, Gareth.
Hello, hello. Can I just say that was really scary, having James suddenly appear down my ear hole, you know, telling me that you can get this on Stitcher and all sorts of, you know, reputable sites.
a few disreputable ones, I dare say.
I thought you were going to do it yourself.
You thought I was going to do it myself? Oh, no, don't bother with that sort of thing. I've got robots for that kind of thing, which essentially
I
what
have
it
long,
is.
I have long suspected that James is actually software.
Well, he's not, actually, because I met him a few weeks ago, and he's a real-life breathing person.
Oh, well, he's got an avatar, then.
Well, yes. Well, he knows about avatars, does Mr. McLean. I will go no further into that line of discussion.
Indeed.
Lest I get into trouble. So, it's podcast time, people. James and Brian aren't available this week due to schedule collisions. Sorry if you're one of Brian's followers, and I'm afraid he's not here with his David Tennant coat, which he wears all the time, as we all know, don't we? James and his butler are also not here, his silent butler. But Gareth Cavanagh is, and Gareth knows a thing or two about Doctor Who himself, probably more than the rest of us.
Probably more than is healthy for me, really.
Yeah. Yes. So what we're going to do, we're going to talk about a few new things, then we're going to go into more of a, have more of a sort of a settled conversation, then we'll hopefully, Gareth brought a recommendation with him, and if he hasn't, he's got time to think of one while I'm talking. So, you know, that all works quite nicely. Before we continue,
yes.
Can you hear that aeroplane?
Am I supposed to say yes?
Just say yes.
Yes.
You may be able to. Listener may be able to. We're having this thing on the podcast of late where there's like an aeroplane going over in every single podcast. And I don't know why. We had it last time.
Drone surveillance, old chap.
It must be, yeah. Let me just close this window. Do you know, I've volunteered for our local radio station.
Really?
Yeah, and we have this thing in Little Redcar. They're trying to get a radio station off the ground called Zetland FM. It's going to be... The planning for it to be in what's basically an ornate helter-skelter without the helter-skelter. It's this thing called a vertical pier in Redcar. Redcar, dear listener, is one of these classic old Victorian seaside resorts that somehow failed to make it into the 20th century, basically.
Oh, but a charm all its own.
Yes. It does have its charms, and the council have done a lot of work in the last few years to try and get it back up to scratch. So they commissioned a people have wanted a pier for years. There used to be two piers here, the last one was brought down in 1982, I think. That's around the time I coined my very first joke as well, as I described it as the disappear. Hey, thank you.
Very good.
Yeah,
very
good. I was only six. So there's been this big push for another pier. So what they did, and this is part of some redevelopment in a wind farm that was built off the coast, an offshore wind farm, was to build what they called a vertical pier, which is really nothing more than a tower, and they call it a beacon. And they're planning to have this radio station inside there. Now, I've got to say, I've got more space in my office here at Cerberus Towers than is in the radio station recording broadcasting studio.
Wow.
At the beacon.
Okay.
So It's quite a strange scenario.
It sounds like John Carpenter's The Fog. You know, do you remember they've got the radio station?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's on the coast. It's right there, sitting, looking out to sea, and there's wind. You know, it's what got me thinking, because you can, not that you can so much hear stuff outside, although you can, because they didn't have it proofed when we went to have a look, soundproof. But that whole window and what you can see and the sound of storms and things and things passing. Yeah. So yeah, it is kind of
zombie scary. Sailors with meat hooks.
Should be exciting if that happens. I'm looking forward to something happening with that, but time will tell, as always, with these slow volunteer projects.
Well, do tell, what's your show? You know, we could...
Well, I don't know yet. I've basically been for a look around.
Many thousands to your listeners.
I know, that's what I was thinking. But, I've only been for a look around and volunteered, but I haven't really spoken to anyone in-depth on it, like on a one-to-one basis, so... I've got a few ideas for shows loosely related to this and other things, which I'm without blowing my own trumpet, although I suppose I am known for online. So,
well, at least three of your listeners will know about your deep knowledge of rock music from the Northeast, widely informed there's a book in the works.
Yeah, there is a book in the works. Yeah, with I don't usually talk about this. This is like the reverse podcast, isn't it?
Yeah.
I am writing a book about rock artists from the northeast of England. Yes, I am. And I have already spoken to Ray Laidlaw from Lindisfarne.
Nice.
And I've got a shopping list of people. I want David Coverdale and Chris Rea and Paul Rogers as well. Anyone beyond that would be a bonus.
They're still breathing, old chap. does Sting count?
Sting certainly counts. He is, yeah, but he's a very, very busy chap. So I did have him. I was quite close to getting him at one point, but that kind of faded away. But still pushing on, trying to get people. I have what?
A brush by, they call it.
Yeah, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. yes. So yeah. Hopefully we'll give that another go. Because Sting's a very interesting guy, I feel.
He is. He'd have been a very good Doctor Who, actually.
There's a lot of people who make a very good Doctor Who.
Yeah, but in a sort of rock sense. You know,
well, Bowie. There's Bowie, isn't there?
The
yeah, I mean, I was thinking
Bowie's
rock,
the
yeah. Yeah, Bowie, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's... but I was watching A Top of the Pops from 1980 last week.
Right.
Had Roger Daltrey on there as a guest, and it's just after he'd done McVicar. And I remember thinking, yeah, there's a touch of the Tom Baker Doctor Who-ness about Daltrey, and actually he's got a sort of ingrained Cockney cool, you know, that Tennant aspires to but never quite gets. So yeah, I think the world of rock could have furnished us with several high quality Doctors.
Is Roger Daltrey like the most well known Cockney who's never been in EastEnders?
Oh, I think you're onto something there. It's only a matter of time.
It's got to be, hasn't it?
It's only a matter of time.
I was thinking of David Bowie as the Doctor with Roy Wood as the Master.
Oh, yes. That's nice. That's nice. And Meatloaf would squeeze a treat into that Colin Baker coat, wouldn't he?
there's a few who would, but I think Meatloaf is probably the one with Jim Steinman as the Master.
Oh, yes. Yes, I feel so.
And Bonnie Tyler is the Rani.
Bonnie Tyler is the Rani. Brutal, old chap. Brutal. The Welsh power ballad Rani. I love it. certainly. There's a few of the odder looking rock gods who would slide into Doctor Who a treat. Gosh, I feel we've prized open a whole can of worms now.
Wilco Johnson, he'd have to get in there, wouldn't he?
Oh, as?
Well, I was thinking that. I'm still thinking. It's got to be Davros, hasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Although,
and he can
to
move
be
backwards
fair,
and forwards. And he can move backwards and forwards with a slightly aggressive look on his face in his Davros
chair. I was thinking of the bloke from The Fall, actually.
But from The Fall?
Marky Smith,
all right.
Taylor-made, yeah.
For Davros.
Taylor-made to be, for ranting away in that chair. reaching for the high quality malt.
No, you're absolutely absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Oh dear, Bob on. I feel we've digressed a bit here.
Slightly, yeah.
You said there was some news you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, let's talk about a bit of news. Capaldi, that famous man who plays the Doctor and also was in a punk band. So it's not too much of a tangent from where we were, has said that he doesn't want Jenna Coleman to leave at the end of the current run of Doctor Who. Presumably by now they know whether she's leaving or not. I say presumably, I don't want to put too much weight on that. One would just assume that that would be the case, but as we saw last time...
To be fair, she has only had 4 exit points so far in the plot.
Is it only 4?
It's only 4. You know, I mean, what's with 5 or 6? I mean, listen, rewind a bit. Are there any pictures of Capaldi in the punk band? I don't think I've seen any.
Oh, I think there is 1 or 2. I'm not sure if I dare type in case I set off a sound effect. But largely, it was him and Ferguson, wasn't it? Craig Ferguson of the late show with Craig Ferguson.
Didn't those boys do well?
Indeed, yeah, which has now been taken over by James Corden.
Yes, yeah, it's just a Doctor Who grasp on that show. But what was Capaldi's punk name? He must have had a punk name, and I bet it was like a Doctor Who inflected one, like, you know, I don't know, Phlegm of Morbius or something.
That would be good, wouldn't it? I found a they can't be called that. Were they called that? Hang on, I've got something.
Skins.
No, it's nowhere near as interesting as that. No, they were called. I think I did know this previously, but they were called Dream Boys.
It's not very punk, is it?
It's not very punk in the slightest. Maybe it's supposed to be ironic.
What was his name? Fluffkins or something?
That's weird. So Capaldi was vocals and guitar.
Naturally.
Yeah, and there's him, a guy called Temple Clark, Craig Ferguson, and a Roderick Murray.
I wonder if they ever did any single.
Yeah, they did. They did. There's one here called Bela Lugosi's Birthday.
Which
is a live single by Look Fixed. It was recorded at the Hellfire Club in Glasgow.
In the day?
Yeah, yeah.
On an old tape recorder.
1980 this was recorded.
Oh, this is immense. Well, you better get these in the show notes, old chap.
They will be in the show notes, don't worry about. Well, you know, when we redesigned Casterbus last year, the logo was intentionally a punk logo, a punk typeface, to pay tribute to Capaldi's past as a punk musician. That's a type of layered
design. He's such a
rudely
talented man, isn't he?
He is, isn't he? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
he's sickeningly talented, isn't he?
He is.
I bet he writes as well.
He directed. Did he write the Cricklewood
thing? He's an Oscar-winning filmmaker. I bet he wrote it.
I think it was very. Did you see it?
No, I didn't see it. I'm just aware that
it's
fantastic. You know, he's the only Doctor with an Oscar in his carsy.
Well, the Oscar was for Franz Kafka's "It's a Wonderful Life."
Yeah,
but the Cricklewood thing is like a fake. British movie industry studio. Now, I think he probably did. My dad watched this, right? My dad's grown up from the golden age of movies, all through that. He's a big fan of photography and British movies, a big fan of the Hammer Studios, all that sort of stuff. He sat watching it for about 45 minutes before he realised it was a spoof.
Oh, brilliant.
That's how good it is. It's absolutely pitched perfectly.
Oh, is it out?
Oh, it was on TV a couple of years ago on BBC4.
That'll
be in the show notes.
On Top of the Pops reruns.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll definitely have that. I tell you what, Capaldi's brilliant in, and no one ever talks about or gives him the credit. He's absolutely brilliant as in Dangerous Liaisons as John Malkovich's footman or butler,
right?
Or whatever it is.
I haven't seen.
And he's
Dangerous
really young and wiry and angry, And I remember thinking, when I first watched it, I think he's very good. You know, it's a little nothing role, but he really makes it his own. It's our Capaldi. So if you want a treat, because you should never need an excuse to dig out Dangerous Liaisons, but if you want a particular treat, try that one.
Okay, that's going to be in the show notes. This is going to be a long show notes this week, I fear.
It is. Anyway, listen, you were mentioning there was some news.
Yeah, so basically, yeah, Capaldi said about Jenna leaving, will these be our last shows? I hope not. I'm not doing any accents this week. Jenna continues to deliver a beautifully nuanced, complex and funny performance that marks her out as one of the best companions ever. It's 2012 when she first appeared, wasn't it?
Yeah, it does seem to be an age away.
So, yeah. In terms of length of time, is she now... Has she beaten Fraser Hines
in a chronological sense, but in terms of sheer number of episodes, because they were on the air for whatever 44 weeks a year back then, I think she'd have to do however many years to beat.
Yeah, she'd
Fraser
have to episode wise, she'd have to go a lot further. Yeah, yeah, but duration wise, and Janet Fielding's the other one, isn't she? I think she's. I think they've. Yeah, she's been.
Yeah, I think she's probably beaten Janet by now. Would have thought. Mm. Or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe not.
Is there someone else who had more than one exit?
Yeah. Well, yeah. That was. I think that was just them being clever, wasn't it? Trying to.
Oh
be clever,
yeah, yeah, but, yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know.
But it worked out quite handily for Big Finish, though, hasn't it?
Yes. Because
they've got that enormous gap where there's just the Doctor and Nyssa, which is quite useful when you've only got the Doctor and Nyssa. So, yeah, anyway, I digress. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with her this year. The problem is that I'm sure they've got to come up with something, but the only problem I have with Clara, and it's nothing to do with Jenna Coleman, who's a nice performance, is that I think I'm not sure where the character goes now. You know, we've had the wrong opening with her where she turns out to be the Dalek, you know. Nice performance as the governess at Christmas. Then we get the Impossible Girl, which is good. But that really, I think, was her story, and that was it. Then you get the, Clara and Danny, and that's quite interesting as well. Then Danny dies. Then he comes back. Then he dies again. So I'm not sure what next. It almost feels like I would have thought that character's played out, but... Maybe they've got something exciting in store.
Well, there's still old Orson Pink as well, isn't there, to try and establish. Oh.
What, so she now goes out with Danny's great-grandfather?
Well, I don't know, maybe my great-grandson,
it's
yeah.
It's stalkery, isn't it?
She might be his grandmother, we don't know.
Well, yeah, that was sort of suggested, wasn't it? But
yeah.
But they, but then Danny got cybernized, so... Not entirely sure that works.
I'm not sure a lot of things work in that episode, to be honest with you, but we'll not go back into that territory if we can avoid it.
Oh, is this the old blink under a blanket, isn't it? Listen.
Well, no, I'm more specific. I think Blink Under a Blanket is a good one. I think Listen's a good episode. No, I'm more concerned. I'm still having trouble with Death in Heaven.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? It's like, I'm struggling to find positive things to say about it.
Basically, you could have an entire podcast about Death in Heaven and still have a lot more to talk about because it's just a bit of a mess, to put things nicely. So let's move on. Anthony Stewart Head. Yeah, Anthony Stewart Head has been.
Oh, him from Buffy. Yeah.
Him from Buffy, that fella, yeah. From the adverts with the gold band.
Oh, with
adverts.
The old shaky coffee, yeah.
Yeah. Will he wants to borrow some coffee, will they, won't they? Yeah, that was
really
a long time ago.
We had nothing to do back in those days, did we?
Clearly.
We lived for the next instalment of an advert.
Well, we didn't have we didn't have as much American TV, did we? There's no cable or satellite channels. There's no reality TV for people to get obsessed over and stuff. There's no American celebrities. Oh, there was American celebrities, but they're all movie stars. There's no like transgendered sports people and TV people and reality stars from.
But those adverts. There. Those adverts would be a franchise now.
Oh, totally.
They've
totally.
Gone straight to a drama series and movies and spin-off books, and occasionally they would have flogged a bit of coffee to us. A missed opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, what's him from Buffy been up to?
Well, he's incredibly won an already incredibly trivial Radio Times online poll to find the best Doctor Who guest star since 2005, somehow beating Sir John Hurt, among many other bigger names.
Are we suggesting that the highly organised Buffy fan base might have mobilised on this?
I wouldn't like to say.
He is very nice in that one, though. It is one of my favourite little turns. So it's not a million miles off.
I would not say otherwise. I would not argue that.
Stalk each other around the pool like a, and the little scene where he offers the Doctor, you know, a share of the Skaesis paradigm is nice, actually.
Yeah, he's really good in it. Absolutely, he's really good in it.
Yeah. The very best guest star, though? I'm not sure. Who else was in it, then? Let's see who we've got to bench it against.
In this poll? Well, let me just bring
Jacoby
that open.
Jacoby would have been there, I would have thought.
Who?
Jacoby?
Well, one would think so. Did you find the best one? I'm just following through a series of links here. So I know Corden is one of them.
You'd expect that.
Nick Frost, Saran Jones, Zoe Wanamaker.
That's Saran Jones, fair. Yeah.
Zoe Wanamaker.
What's she in?
She was Cassandra, wasn't she? So she's in
New Earth. Doesn't really count. There's a voice. You might as well have... what's his name? Brian Cox in it.
Well, she is in New Earth. In person, towards the end of New Earth.
Well, that's a bit of a cheat, really, isn't it? I mean, mostly she's a trampoline and a brain in a box.
Yeah. Simon Pegg, Kerry Mulligan for Sally Sparrow, John Hurt.
Fair.
Georgia Moffat, Tom Baker.
Reasonable. Baker?
Yeah, I think they're stretching it now, are they? James Corden, as mentioned. And
where's Jacoby? If Jacoby's not
Jacoby's not in there. Jacoby's not in there.
That's it. Well, that's who should have won. I'm outraged. I might go online now and vote 8 times.
Yeah, outraged. It's too late. It's already finished.
I'm absolutely out. How could you not vote for Jacoby? He's the best thing in it. He's arguably the best master we've had since Delgado.
Oh, yeah.
I hope you're all ashamed if you're listening and you actually voted in this. Oh, dear. Oh, I wish you hadn't told me that. I'm really upset.
Yeah. Ed says that he believes that Mr. Finch survived. Worryingly, he says, I know him personally, and I think he's keen to meet the Doctor again.
Do you know what? Do you know why I think he stands out? And I think he's got an urbane, almost 70s villain quality to him, you know. Mm-hmm. He's got that silk, he's got the smooth, he doesn't raise his voice very often. This is a very, very high-quality 70s villain. You know, it's so... Actually...
Or
I
80s.
Think that perhaps Mr. Finch, or 80s, yeah, perhaps Mr. Finch is exactly what we've been missing. Mm-hmm. You know, because we haven't had memorable villains. You know, out of those, I think Simon Pegg isn't that memorable. He plays himself. The guy who plays Van Staten in the first series is pretty good. I remember him being okay. He's good. But out of all the others, I mean, there's not much that's memorable about Cassandra. Most of that's in the writing. It's in Russell's very waspish writing. No, they're all pretty forgettable, all the other ones. And everyone loves Sally Sparrow, but that's, you know, that's because she's very good in a one-off. And is her own character. It's basically a Doctor Who spin-off. Blink. Yeah.
Well, obviously the Tom Baker one isn't forgettable, but I'm pretty sure you didn't mean that one.
That's not very fair, though. He's, you know...
Well, he's Tom Baker, right, isn't he? No, it's absolutely it's not fair
it's
at all,
Baker,
is it?
You know, it's not really, you know, that's just another Tom Baker appearance, you know. Yes, you can argue if he's the curator or the Doctor. I think we're pretty clear he's the Doctor. You know, I don't think anyone...
He's both, isn't he?
Well, what? Is he a retired future version of the Doctor?
Yeah, he's got to be. Revisiting an old face.
Well, I suppose the Doctor is now immortal, technically, so he'll get round to it eventually. He doesn't look like he's having a smashing time, though, does he, the curator?
What do you mean?
Well, if he's one thing, he hasn't got that doctorish voir de vivre. You know, would the Doctor be happy drinking tea and, you know, and working in an art gallery.
Well, I suppose if he wants a bit of a rest, it's a good place to sort of like tuck himself away for a bit, isn't it? I mean, he must have had lots of little breaks and stuff over the years. I mean, there's that famous story about Tom Baker wanting to do a story about the Doctor going on holiday, wasn't there? Not being able to have the holiday because people keep...
Oh, yes, this was Douglas Adams, where the Doctor retires.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he can't. Yeah, well,
yeah,
that's
right.
That's true. And I used to like, actually, one of the best things about the first... you know, Tom Baker strips in Doctor Who Weekly, is the Doctor's permanently trying to get to Benidorm. and I could see Tom Baker's late 70s Doctor in Benidorm. Oh, marvellous. You can see it, can't you?
Yeah.
A cold ginger ale pop on the front, you know, a bit of karaoke in the afternoon, you know, and then seeing off an invasion of the sea devils on the beach of Benidorm in the afternoon. Yeah, I mean, it's that worked. But I'm not sure I see him as a sort of dusty old curator, because that's what he ran away from. That was the whole idea, that, you know, that Gallifrey was full of all these dusty, boring old senators. So the idea that he's there running an art gallery in London, you know, presumably has his Oyster card and all sorts of other useful things to get round the capital with, I'm not sure.
Sonic Oyster. I'm not sure.
Yes, a Sonic Oyster.
They're a great band, weren't they, Sonic Oyster?
They are.
Okay, well, so Anthony Head...
We digressed again, haven't we?
Yeah, Anthony Head, do we want him back on? I've got to say, I do agree with you. I think it would be interesting to see him back in the same role as well. There's no point in doing the same performance in a different character. Might as well do that same role. Although, how you tie it up, I don't know. Doctor! It is I! How do you tie that back in something that was 10 years ago? Continuity-wise, do you want to dwell on it too much, a little bit, or what? Ooh, it's a little bit of a tricky one.
But, you know, Capaldi would happily have a Monoptera and a Chumbly do a cameo, a drop of a hat.
I think he's already asked for the Chumblies, hasn't he?
He's for the Chumblies. Yeah.
And
he wants a Monoptera. So, you know what? If they reappeared, people would just go, oh, yeah. They'd go on the internet and go, oh, yeah, it's those things from the past. Aren't they rubbish? not a fan of the Monoptera. Although the Chumblies are quite nice.
Yeah, I think, they're obviously pushing the boundaries of what they could do, weren't they? So I find them an admirable diversion.
I like that.
Yes.
Yeah, so yes, I vote for the return of Mr. Finch, and I think all right-minding voting Buffy fans feel the same. So good for them. They've done a good thing.
Indeed. Okay. Now, did I update that to get rid of the spelling error? Yes, I did. Good. So, on to... do you know what's happening this weekend?
It's not another heat wave, is it?
Possibly. And also... pre-season has started across the country, so there might be some friendlies. I didn't mean that. I was actually talking about Comic Con International 2015. This is the big Comic Con, the San Diego Comic Con.
You mean different to the Wigan and Bolton Comic Cons?
Well, I didn't mean necessarily them. I was meaning things like the London one and perhaps, you know, the Wizard World one, which is quite large. Oh, and then there's a New York Comic Con as well, isn't there? But this is the big Las Vegas one.
This is the Mothercraft.
Sorry, this is the San Diego one, I beg your pardon, not Las Vegas. Las Vegas, that's another big one. But no, we're talking about the San Diego, the mother, as you say. Would you say the mother load? Yeah.
The Mothercraft.
The Mothercraft, okay.
Or it could be Mother as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of Doctor Who stuff going on.
They always get to see our good stuff before we do.
Yeah, well,
slightly irritated online.
2 years ago, there was a Day of the Doctor trailer, wasn't there, which caused a bit of consternation, and then the BBC couldn't understand why fans were annoyed. It's like, hello,
we do pay for this.
It's not even just we do pay for this. It's why did 200 people get to see it, and or even 2,000 people, and the rest of the world didn't? It's like, get your priorities right.
Yeah, it sounds really churlish, but it does happen. I mean, it was really, I really enjoyed the game this year. Toby Whittakhouse is the game. So there's our little link with Mr. Finch and School Reunion. And we were the last place in the world to get it. America got it in, I think, October. Australia got it in January, and we got it sort of farted out at the end of April. It had been all over the torrents and everything, and I couldn't understand how that played out. It
was
didn't
that
make
BBC?
Any sense.
Was that on BBC?
That was BBC Two, yeah.
That seems to me like a channel that doesn't have much confidence in the programme to me, or doesn't get it.
It does. Yeah, I think maybe you're right. And it really surprised me because, actually, it's a very good show. Mm. I mean, very good.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about it.
I don't think we're going to get any more, sadly. And it's a shame because it was, very stylish, great cast, very good writing, excellent twist, you know. It had the lot. And yet we got it last. It didn't make sense.
No.
So anyway, moans aside, what have we got coming up at the San Diego Comic Con?
Yeah, so on Thursday starts.
They'll see the Chumblies first now, the Swans.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Yeah. BBC America have announced an autograph signing with the cast, Peter Capaldi, Jenna Coleman and Michelle Gomez. And that is on Thursday morning. Then there is also, later on Thursday, there is the official panel, 2:15 to 3:15, with Capaldi, Jenna Coleman, Michelle Gomez, Stephen Moffat. I think Minchin's over there as well, although they don't mention him. So whether he's on the panel or not, I don't know. There's space for 1,845 people to view something that no one else will be able to see there. So, So there's going to be... That's 2:15. That's 7:15 in the evening our time, I think. San Diego, isn't it? So it's later than that. It's going to be 10 o'clock, 10 or 11 o'clock at night. So there's going to be a lot of news appearing on Twitter and elsewhere Friday morning. So something to be aware of there, dear listener. And then there's also on Saturday, there's a Doctor Who Comics panel Year 2 crossover event and new miniseries with Cavan Scott and Paul Cornell. And George Mann.
Oh, wow.
I
know George and Cav. Good for them. Yeah, they've done well, haven't they? They've really
scaled
the greasy pole.
Artists Blair Shedd and Alice Exang as well. So that's... if you're not that interested in the other one, this seems like potentially a far more interesting panel because of the people that you've got on board there.
What
Titan are doing.
Story.
So so there's a big Doctor Who profile at Comic Con, and if there is a trailer or some footage, then that is going to steal a few headlines. One would suspect.
I would be very surprised if there isn't a trailer because it must. You know, I mean, I assume it's going to air in early September because that seems to be when it airs now, or even late August actually.
Well, it used to late August the year before
August
last.
Bank holiday, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, the 2012.
And actually, I think the August bank holiday is right bang at the end of August this year. So I think that's probably when we'll get it. So we're only 7 weeks out from that. So yeah, I think it's a cert they'll get stuff.
Yeah, Monday the 31st is on a Monday. Hence Monday. So Saturday the 29th could be the date.
I'll be shocked if it isn't, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's a shame. I would prefer to start a bit later.
I don't have any insider knowledge. Oh, when would you like it to start then?
I'd rather it started end of September, so it just ran on a little bit longer and then had a break just before Christmas. That's my preference. So we get a few more Dark Nights. There isn't too much of a breakup. I'm more into... You know me. We must have had this conversation before. I'm all about the Dark Nights with Doctor Who. I sit with the curtains closed when I watch Doctor Who.
Well, we did in the olden days, that's true. But that's because we had no electricity in the 70s. You know, and to send father out to cycle for an hour to get enough electricity in the generator so we could watch the telly.
Watch it,
for
yeah.
20 minutes.
Squat
you know, with our fish fingers and chips cooked on a Bunsen burner.
Yeah.
Oh, glorious days.
Bunsen burner, you were lucky.
You were lucky. We had to eat it raw. No,
luxury,
spoils, upper crust. I don't know. I think the one thing, one of many things that Russell and team got right was that Easter start. And I think the idea that you start in the Easter, you finish in the summer, and then you get Christmas as a little refill of humus halfway through the year. I don't think it's a bad thing.
No, I don't think it's a bad idea. I think if you are going to be playing into the autumn, though, then there's no point playing into the autumn. You should be starting in the autumn. I do agree. Yeah. I do like the RTD sort of dynamic schedule. I do agree with you that you get that extra bit of Christmas to refresh you. But I think if it's going to be in the second half of the year, then make it, you know, take advantage of the dark nights.
Yeah. Or the alternative is that you have your Christmas episode, then you start in the third, fourth week of January.
Yeah.
But you start open the season with Christmas. Because the season openers are traditionally quite light and fluffy anyway, and they're usually very standalone because they're a, I suppose in theory, as far as they can see, the opening of the season is always a jumping on point for someone, whether it's the next generation of 5-year-old kids or whether it's, I don't know, people who've drifted away from it and then go, oh, Doctor Who's on, let's give it another go. What's it like nowadays? So why not have that as the Christmas one?
Yeah.
I don't know. We're getting into fantasy scheduling here, aren't we? Which is always a treat.
I think we all played didn't we?
We did. It's a particularly sad game that we play as Doctor Who fans. You know, you picture your perfect Saturday lineup. You know,
It's talking about Saturday lineups, and you know, Americans aren't going to get this. What the hell is BBC doing with its sports coverage? Because to me, ever since they got rid of Grandstand, it's completely lost focus. They just put things there, and everywhere.
Grandstand was terrible.
Grandstand was fantastic.
You can't get nostalgic for Grandstand. It was not great.
It was brilliant. You'd get football focus. No. You get your football focus, you get the news, then you go into some proper sport that people maybe aren't that used to seeing, then you go into something more mainstream, and then finish off with some rugby league, and then go into the news.
True. Well, all right. I tell you what, that's quite convincing. And I tell you what, I'll give you this. I did get quite hooked on Crown Green Bowling one year.
Right.
It was one of the most exciting things I'd ever watched, you know. It was really good. Who knew that the Scottish were so good at bowls? They were absolute killers at bowls. And yes, I suppose, where would I watch my bowls now with no,
well, there you go.
With no
there
grandstand?
You go.
No, but yeah, you're right. I mean, I suppose you finish with Grandstand, football scores, news, Pink Panther, Jim will fix
Pink
it,
Panther.
Which we can't really talk about anymore, but
no,
it was
we'll
popular
about
for about 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Would you have? Yeah, then no, it was Doctor Who, then the Generation Game, then
Life.
What came after the Generation Game? Oh, the news again. It'd be the news again.
Probably the news, yeah.
And then you'd get Parkinson.
Or
two Ronnies, yeah. Another Titan. And then you'd get a late film, usually something with Steve McQueen in.
And close down.
And then the telly would shut. Yeah, magically shut at midnight. And the teletext would come on. Ah, glorious days. Glorious days.
It's a funny thing, you know, we'll talk about that because you have missed out one key element. Teletext, or before teletext came along, was the national anthem.
Oh, yes, he used to finish with the national anthem, that's right.
Yeah,
there's plenty of those on YouTube, actually. They are.
Is there?
Endlessly.
Right.
Now,
I mentioned that because that's kind of like a tradition that's kind of doesn't happen anymore. That, you know, like social clubs, particularly those affiliated with the British Legion, they would...
What, would salute the television at the end of...
No, they would finish the night with the national anthem.
Really?
Yeah, and they don't do it anymore. Like, the one near us was doing it up until about... And they've only stopped in the last 10 years. Because I was there one night when they did it, which was a bit of a... I was thinking, Christ, am I in the past? Or am I in some sort of... British BNP
actually,
stronghold.
That's a line from the Italian Job that's brilliant, where Mr. Bridges moaning about that young lot in E Block. I've noticed they're not standing to attention when the national anthem is played at the end of the evening's television. Tell them to do so, or they will incur my displeasure.
Yes.
So it is another world, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, the idea that we got the national anthem. Wow. And then you got the and then you would get the test card. And a selection of sort of, you know, high quality light dinner jazz to see you through to the morning. God.
You'd also get stills from programs, wouldn't you? Like the promotional stills with the channel's ident on to some of the music.
Yeah. Oh, it was another era. I went for a had a good chat and a drink with Steve Gallagher, esteemed writer of Warriors Gate and Terminus, a couple of months back. And he was telling me about how he used to work at, when he worked at Granada in the 70s, he was trainee assistant program controller. What a title. And he said it was absolutely amazing. He said, we'd set the whole... So basically, they had to play in all the programs. They'd cue in Charles Foster to say, you know, ooh, and next it's Rainbow or whatever. And they had to play the adverts. So they had the schedule and they'd get it all planned out. And he said, so we'd plan that out in the morning. He said, then what would happen is then we'd go to the Postal Workers Union Club and have a few drinks. He said, and the first round was usually a large glass of wine. And then we had another large glass of wine. Then we mopped that up with three or four pints and a short. And then we'd go back to work. He said, and quite often, he said, the controller and assistant controller would just go to sleep in the corner and leave me to run it. He said, well, one fateful afternoon, we put the wrong film on. He said, they put on a French language film. And they just played it. And he said, we didn't get a single complaint. No one noticed. he said, and we realized we'd made a mistake, but it was too late. And then Charles Foster, they just queued in and Charles Foster just said, well, I hope you enjoyed that unscheduled cultural treat. Next, Rainbow. and this was the marvelous industry of television we worked in. I was really, you know, that was, everything seemed to be on a knife edge back then. So, gosh, I bet someone was there having to put the slides in order for that evening. God knows what slipped in. There must have been some incredible treats.
Well, of course, nowadays, all you need to do is just press a button. On your computer. So the amount of preparation that they had to do before they got to the stage of queuing it in those days as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was insane. And there was this little, I've seen it, the little continuity studio where they'd have the little continuity announcers. It was a real art form in those days. You know, you must have had some in the Northeast. You know, you must have had your, or did you get Granada? Oh, no, you'd have been Yorkshire telly, wouldn't you?
No, we have Newcastle.
You were Tyne Tees, were you?
Tyne Tees, yeah.
Who was the Geordie Charles Foster then?
A chap called Neville, whose second name escapes me at the moment.
A chap called Neville.
Yes.
So he had his own little cupboard with a desk then.
Well, we always saw them.
Yeah, well, that's it. We used to see Charles Foster and the rest of them. It was a real starring role.
So they'd have this, you know? They'd have this background with the Tyne Tees TV logo and then a shot of the Tyne Bridge, which, you know, living south of Middlesbrough felt really relevant to us.
Well, you were Yorkshire boys, really, weren't you, down there?
Well, yeah, because, you know, we were in Yorkshire until sort of 1969, and Middlesbrough was part of Yorkshire. Yeah. Everything south of the Tees was Yorkshire.
We
were Tyne Tees since Tyne Tees started, which was 1957, I think.
59,
that sort of time, yeah. I think it was one of the first that went on air, or if not the first that went on air on ITV.
Yeah, wow, Super Tyne Tees. We never really got... didn't Tyne Tees make Supergram?
Yes, they did, yes.
Yeah,
and the Tube.
Yeah, that's all
just,
I can remember.
Just to balance things out, they made the Tube as well.
Oh, well, you're not... You haven't got a cultural cringe over Supergram, have you?
I may have a slight one, yeah. Well, the thing is, it was made by Tyne Tees, but obviously it was set in Scotland.
Yeah, that was another strange decision, one of many.
That's like, I suppose it's not too different to BBC Wales making Casualty and setting it in Bristol. Although they don't make it in Bristol anymore,
do they? They don't make it in Bristol. It's well, let's face it, it's in Holby, and Holby suddenly has become part of Wales. So I don't know. I mean, I'm going a bit grumbly, moany old man here now, but I watched Casualty the other day, and I didn't recognise the programme I used to watch. Apart from Charlie being in it, I didn't recognise anything.
Was there not an obvious accident at the beginning?
Oh, well, the format's the same, but
oh, right,
just,
okay.
I don't know. It just it all looked a bit too professional for me.
Uh-huh. Oh, it certainly,
know,
certainly
I missed
moved
that,
on a lot.
That grainy video look, and you know. Anyway, for those of you out there who enjoy Casualty, God bless you.
Well, the grainy video look, I mean, it's long gone now, isn't it? It's we're never going to see that again.
Yeah, sadly. Sadly, that's true. I'm too nostalgic for these things. Anyway, I think we've lost our thread again.
But, yeah, well, let's get on to conventions. Because we were talking about exclusives, weren't we? And I was thinking, well, yeah, an exclusive is kind of a big draw for convention. But how does someone running a small convention get an exclusive? And I thought to myself, who could I possibly ask that question to? Mm-hmm. And I thought, what about Gareth Cavana, who's run a fair few of his own conventions?
Well, yeah, it's true. I am always in favour of an exclusive. Mostly, it's by actually just doing your homework and working hard and asking the cheeky question. We've had a few, actually. I remember the first con I ran at the last was specifically about Doctor Who and the comics, and we got quite a few exclusives there. But the one exclusive we got, which appears to be the only time it's ever, ever been seen, is that we got the we showed the Fire Trap trailer for Power of the Daleks. Fire Trap, of course, were the guys who had come out of Cosgrove Hall who'd done the Invasion animations in 2006. So, and they had worked on a follow-up, and they did the David Tennant animations as well. Was it Infinite Quest and a
Infinite
few
Quest
others?
Infinite Quest, and there was Dreamland as well. Infinite Quest was
I don't think
better.
They did Dreamland, but right. They did the Infinite Quest, and it was
Infinite
good
Quest
one.
Was
it
fantastic.
Was really... And they did Shalka, and they did, but they did the Invasion, and they did a full. They did, it was like a sort of, you know, it was a full trailer for Power of the Daleks, which they'd pitched to Worldwide as being let's animate a full one, and it never happened.
Right.
And they never showed it since, and they just showed it the once at our little con.
Now I was at that con, and I have no memory of this.
Do you not remember that?
No, I don't
you must
remember
have been
that
having
at
a
all.
Wee at that.
I must have been, yeah, stressing over the idea
someone
of interviewing
filmed.
Tony Lee and Gary Russell, something like that.
Oh, yes, you did Tony and Gary, that, right. Yeah, the Five Step guys were in the morning. You should have a chat with them.
Because I may have arrived a little bit after you started. So maybe
I've got a feeling it was an early one, yeah, you might have missed it because you were travelling over. But, no, they were lovely. They'd be worth a chat. Actually.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And it was really, it's really just about digging deeper and finding interesting people who've never been interviewed before. So that's the sort of level of exclusive you get. I mean, look, lots of people go to conventions because they enjoy seeing Colin Baker for the sixth time that year. And there's a market for that, you know, and there's always something that he hasn't signed yet. And, you know, you do wonder what new things will Colin Baker have to say this year. And occasionally he will do. But most of the time, you know, it's a fairly worn track that he's on. So in that instance, I think the onus is on the convention guys to do something interesting with them. So that's the other thing with exclusives is do something interesting. And
where do
and
you start? With not just the exclusives, but you know, do you jot down a list of who you want to have? Do you? In your case, it wasn't so much of a problem, but probably is a little bit. Obviously, these days.
Well,
you
the
do
first
have...
thing I do is who do I know?
Yeah. So, okay.
The first where I start is who do I know?
Right.
So who do I know personally? And then I think, well, who might they know? The people I know. Who might they know? So you start with a list of who you know, and who you know who they know, and then you look for who you can get to. And there's lots of ways around this. LinkedIn is very good, actually, for finding people.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people on LinkedIn, you know, obviously, that you can't search in other ways. And it's really just asking and being pleasant and polite. But the other thing is, as I say, giving them something different and challenging. I've got Philip Hinchcliffe coming to Manchester in October for an afternoon, like we did with the Terrence event.
I'm there.
And again, good man. It's 4th of October, Sunday 4th of October. What sold Philip was not so much, you know, a financial deal because I can't compete with these big cons, nowhere near.
Yeah.
And I want it to be affordable, so it's only £6 a head. You know, because I have this theory that Doctor Who fans are pretty solidly rinsed by the machine in terms of merchandise, but also in terms of cons and autographs and the rest of it. So not everyone can afford that. So this is something affordable. What I said to Philip, I said, not Philip, yeah, Philip. There's too many Philips in my life at the moment. What I said to Philip is, I said, well, what do you want to talk about? And he said, well, you know, I get asked about the Doctor Who stuff a lot. And of course, it's an interesting part of my career, but it's not my whole career. So what we're working on with Philip is we're going to talk about Hinchcliffe's BBC, his life as a BBC producer, including Doctor Who. And we're going to talk about five people in his life in time at the BBC. So we're going to talk about Barry Letts, obviously his predecessor. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about Tom Baker and how he managed him. We're going to talk about Bill Slater, who was the original head of drama when he came in. We're going to talk about Graeme McDonald, who was the later head of drama, uh-huh. and where Doctor Who fitted into that whole drama, you know, into that whole drama network. And we're going to talk about poor old Graeme Williams, who, of course, replaced Philip, and Philip replaced him on the cop show Target. So I think by covering those five sort of points of discussion with lots of interesting visuals and clips, I think we'll get something brand new out of Philip. You know, a guy who's interviewed up and down the country quite often, but we're going to get new juice out of that old bit of fruit. So it's that's what I would say how you do it.
You're putting thought into something, whereas most people might just like make a list and book a venue. You're approaching it from a different angle.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it in terms of, you know, what are we going to talk about that's interesting? Mm. When we had Warris down in Manchester, Warris's aim, I dug out an interview that Sydney had done, and he'd never seen it before. And then it was Sydney sat in his office talking to a guy from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. And at one point, it's on YouTube, it's wonderful. You might have a link to it. At one point, he just leans back and puts his feet up on the desk and carries on talking. And then we stopped about then. And Warris went, yes, he said, that's Sydney, that's Sid. And then it sparked a whole new series of anecdotes because we, you know, we'd done it. Because the one thing that frustrates me with cons, and I guess, you know, San Diego, maybe this is right, this is why they have the exclusives and the footage, is we're talking about a visual medium and no one even shows as much as a still. They just have people up on the stage talking. And, you know, I'll see directors interviewed and what they need is visuals. They need clips. They need stuff that sparks reminiscence. You know, that's what I do. That's what I do. That's what maybe we do different is we keep them affordable. We make them interesting. We put the effort in terms of a clips package.
Okay. Well, I mean, I've never seen anyone disappointed at one of the events that you've put together. So I'm absolutely confident that you are doing it certainly in a way that suits a lot of fans, if not the best
way. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I like to think we're a bit more BBC Four in our approach.
Yes. Yeah, that's a very good analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Okay. Well, listen, we've been chatting for a while, Mr. Cavanna. And the clock ticks by. Let me just play with one of my new toys. It's recommendations time.
Ooh.
Now you are a guest on the podcast, even though you're kind of like the fourth podcast member, kind of.
Yeah.
You're the Pete Best of the podcast.
Yes, I was Pete Best.
No, I wouldn't say Pete Best. What's the guy who used to play the keyboards for the Beatles? That guy.
Oh, no, you got me. Well, I was thinking more like Unit HQ, you know.
Okay.
While you lot are off having an adventure in Peladon, I'm there pottering around looking for the master, and occasionally you need me for a story, so that's fine. You know?
Yes. Yeah, that'll do. Yeah. Okay.
Sergeant Benton of the.
Sergeant Benton of the podcast. Yeah. Do you want to go first or shall I go first? I mean, you are the guest, so it's only polite that the guest should go first.
All right. I tell you what. I'll go first because I actually have an exclusive for you.
Okay.
I have an exclusive. My recommendation for the week is my first one is one of the finest Tom Baker stories I think ever made in that early Graeme Williams era, Image of the Fendal.
Right.
A terrific piece of writing from Chris Boucher, really layered, really interesting. And what makes it, I think, very unusual for the era is the Doctor's a secondary character in his own show. Very unusual at the time. It's really the story of those scientists and the discoveries they make and their interplay. Great piece of writing, great bit of acting, well directed. The reason I recommend this, apart from the fact that it's brilliant, is that we're doing a live theatre adaptation of Image of the Fendal next year in Manchester.
Are you indeed?
Yes. Chris Boucher has said warmly approved, because we've previously done Robots of Death, and he said, yes, please go ahead and do it. Now, before your more legal-minded listeners reach for their phone and dial their lawyers on their speed dial, this adaptation will not include the Doctor or Leela or the Sonic Screwdriver or the TARDIS. And, of course, K-9 isn't in it anyway.
No Leela?
There'll be no Leela. No, because the BBC own Leela.
Right, okay.
So, but what it does mean is that my good friend Alan Stevens of Caldor City fame, who of course has done a lot of work with the Fendal in that, so really gets it, will be retooling those scripts with a brand new protagonist, two brand new protagonists, obviously, to fill the Doctor and Leela's hole. But it won't just be we take their lines; it'll be something more interesting and satisfying than that. So that's something
I never
planned
thought
for...
I'd hear the words Phil Leela's hole on the podcast this week, I have to say.
Oh, wow. There we go. So that's coming next year.
That's exciting.
Yes.
I shall not miss it. Unfortunately, I didn't make Robots of Death, but I will endeavour to...
Yes, it's going to be a treat. So I've got a nice... dark cellar venue in mind for it, so it'd be really super creepy, and I hope that we can get it on in those dark winter months when, you know, which is Doctor Who country, as we discussed.
Yeah, so, okay, excellent.
So there we go, let's see.
Top recommendation. Right, well, mine is you probably won't know this because you probably haven't listened to the podcasts that we've done it in, or you weren't on the podcast we've done it in. I do know that you do tune in from time to time, though.
I do.
I'm still on Primeval. Series 4.
Is that still going?
No, it's not still going, unfortunately, no. I do like Primeval. I think Doctor Who could learn a few things from Primeval. Not necessarily in the art of making a TV show, but in like the way it does stories and like the
it's a good piece
how
of
it
family
approaches.
Drama.
It is. And I'm on the fourth series, which is... The fourth and fifth series were produced at the same time, and they're half the length of the first three series.
Oh, is this
series.
The ones that they did for Watch?
Yes, that's right, yeah. So there's a refreshed cast. So Kieran McMenamin's brought in as the new team leader. Abby and Connor have been lost for a while, and they get back at the beginning of the series, find out everything's changed. Becca's still there as the security guy. Ben Miller's still there, but they've brought in... Alexander Siddig as a private sector partner to the ARC. He's a bit mysterious. You don't really know what's going on with him. Yeah. And it's re-energized. I think it's the best series. I haven't seen series 5 yet at all. I've seen everything up to the point I'm up to now. So when we get to series 5, this is going to be completely new Primeval for us. And it totally re-energizes it, because Kieran McMenamin, it turns out, and it's spoilers, but you know, this is like 4 years old now, has traveled back through an anomaly back to the present day, because the future of Earth, everyone's living underground because the surface is completely destroyed, and it's something to do with the anomaly. So he's trying to find out who's to blame and to stop it from happening. So you've got this very interesting arc going on. Then you've also got these travellers from the past who have come to the present day, among them Ruth Bradley from Doctor Who Dark Eyes from Big Finish. And there's a guy called Ethan. And it turns out that Ethan isn't really called Ethan, and that he has a connection to Danny, who also was trapped in the past, but not at the same time as Abby and Connor in the previous series. And that's Jason Fleming's character. And he returns in the final episode of this run with a warning about Alexander Siddig's character, and to take his brother, or to follow his brother, basically, who's going on this sort of like mad space-time rampage. It's a really good series, and it's really tight, and there's more of a focus on storytelling that you got with the previous series. The problem with series three,
never put it up against Doctor Who.
Well, exactly. No, they should never should have done.
Because that audience would have watched both.
Yeah, I think they would. Series 3 lost its way basically because the main character wanted to leave.
Right.
Douglas Henschel wanted to leave, so he only did like 2 or 3 episodes. And there's only one really good episode in Series 3, and that's one James Moran wrote, which was the first one with Jason Fleming in, incidentally.
Nice.
That's really the best episode in Series 3. Other than that, it's a bit of a struggle, Series 3. So when Series 4 came along, they clearly knew what was wrong and sorted it out. So we're up to Series 4. So next time, I'm hoping to have some Series 5 discussion. But I recommend, if I was recommending Primeval to you, I'd more or less, I know it's difficult because it's slap bang in the middle of the storyline for two characters, but it's probably the best place to start watching the show.
Well, do you know, I watched it when it first came on, and I remember thinking I admire it, but it did feel like Dinosaur of the Week, you know. Ooh, this week a woolly mammoth is running riot in Manchester.
Yeah.
Or this week it's a pterodactyl on the loose. Or, ooh, we've got a bit more money this week. A T-Rex is rampaging around the park. and that was a shame, really, because I think it turned me off it, and it sounds like it's far more my cup of tea, actually.
Yeah, the series, the fourth series, and I imagine the fifth because they're produced at the same time and they're continuing the storyline. So it's a shame. Because what happened after Series 5 is it got dropped again, and then it got picked up by a Canadian broadcaster. And the guy's name escapes me, plays Connor, was in one or two of those episodes in Canada, but then it got dropped again. So.
How distressing.
It is a shame. I think really.
I take it's dead as a stone now.
Yeah, I believe it is. They should really have just left it where it was with Series 5. I think there was some talk of a movie as well, but they really should have just left it where it was with Series 5, I think. And ITV should really have had a bit. It's always been the problem with ITV, though. They've never known what to do with genre programming, have they? You know, when I was a kid, Sapphire and Steel was on 1 week, and then it wasn't on again for 6 months.
ITV knows what it's strong at, though. You know, I posted something about, I think, ITV on Facebook the other day.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
And I got really snarky things about going, oh, ITV just farts out this dribble of nonsense. And you know, and I thought, well, I posted back quite a robust defence, actually. And I said, well, look, you know, ITV One has to be commercial. It just does because it doesn't get any subsidy. So it has to, everything it does has to have a reason. It has to fit a demographic. It has to... You know, it has to work. But I said, but let's look at what ITV does well. ITV has won the battle for daytime long since. It's won the battle for breakfast. It's won. It really dominates in female-centric programming. It dominates in the soap, era. It dominates all those, and it still actually manages to do some exciting drama as well. And frankly, there's nothing finer to watch late at night than a good dose of ITV4.
ITV4. You know, did you catch Safe House with Christopher Eccleston?
No, I wanted to watch that. Yeah,
that was
looked good.
But you're talking about strong, so like experimental drama. The one with John Sim last year.
Yeah.
Where it was on the run. Yeah. That was a really good one as well.
They keep doing things and they make decisions, but then they also make blockbusters like Downton Abbey. So, you know, there is this. I've never quite understood this. I didn't realise this growing up, but there were whole households, and I know one person who said this, who were not allowed to watch ITV.
We were not quite there, but we were very close. We weren't not allowed to watch it. It was basically a case of daytime because there was children's isn't the right word. Well, yeah, children's. You know, there's the Rainbow and stuff on at lunchtime.
Yeah.
And there was the school stuff before Channel 4 came along on the morning. And there was Coronation Street. But other than those, we were nearly exclusively watching BBC.
Yeah, but I don't get this, you see. We used to watch both, but I think we were probably, more than anything, we were an ITV house, I think.
Uh-huh.
You know, as a special treat on a Friday night, we used to stay up and watch... The Benny Hill Show. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, you're here? You're there? You're
yeah,
good?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, there was a strange beep in the background. I thought, oh, this is my battery going.
No,
we used to watch that stuff. So there's this snobbishness, which I just don't get. and it still pervades today, that if it's on the BBC, it's top quality, you know, and if it's on ITV, it's trash, and I don't follow that at all.
I think they both have their weak areas and their strong areas.
Ooh. Well, as a freelance, I get to watch telly all day, many days. And, you know, BBC's daytime stuff seems to be obsessed with your house. You know, how much is your house worth?
Yeah.
How can we make your house worth more? Here's some bloke buying a house for 100 grand, fixing it up and then selling it for 200. Isn't that great? And I'm thinking, well, hang on a minute. This is how we got into a huge property bubble here, Mr. BBC. It's not 2007 anymore. Mm. And on and on and on it goes. So I don't know. It's I admire a lot about the ITV, and I think it's,
as I say, they've both got the strengths and the weaknesses. You know, you've got ITV doing its ripping off Channel 4's Come Down With Me. They've got their own version of Come Down With Me, haven't they? Which they've flogged to death. They've got
Well, listen, our Sarah, all she watches is ITVB, you know, TOWIE and all the reality shows that are out there, the hundreds of ones and Love Island.
BBC's got 100 antique show, hasn't it? So
yeah,
they're both very good at identifying what their viewers like and then spinning those ideas off into infinity.
Yeah, so what we need is more choice, really.
Not sure about that.
Oh, I don't know. I have to say, you know...
Yeah, there is quite ITV. A bit of choice out there at the moment, and often you find yourself sitting in front of the TV, flicking through, trying to discern
and
that
then
choice, don't you?
The Who on the Horror Channel.
Yeah.
So, not that at all, we're one club golfers as viewers, you know. Anyway, sorry, yes, that was your recommendation, which we...
Sure, that was my recommendation, yes. Yeah. So two good recommendations. I kind of prefer yours, I think, actually.
Oh, Fendal. I had another one. I've forgotten it now. So it can't have been that good.
All right. Yeah, well, I've only got the one. So, we're in good time to finishing the podcast this week. And we have, dear listener, I'm afraid, reached that stage. So I'd like to thank Gareth Cavanagh for taking the time to join us on the podcast this week. I'd also like to thank James and Brian for... they weren't here, were they?
For not turning up. Never mind. This has been one of those nice little episodes in Unit HQ where we've put the kettle on and had a chat. And, you know, and Pertwee Tennant and Tom Baker will be off flying around in space in their exciting podcast. And when they can't be bothered, you'll come back to Unit HQ for a cosy chat about ITV.
I definitely could not have put that better. So, until next time, dear listener, goodbye. Oh, here he is.
Yeah. Oh.
Get your glow sticks out.
Just need a bit more of a heavy bass then.